And this is the Age Group Multisport Podcast with me, Richard Conway. This is a platform for age group multisport athletes to showcase their journeys. Welcome along to another episode of the Age Group Multisport Podcast. Hope you're all fit and well and enjoying this brief spell of warm weather we've had the last fortnight, and your training's going well and you're able to get out and do some road biking and open water swimming and cross country running or whatever, and just enjoying a bit of summer. It's nice. Episode 81, and we have Thomas McManus. Now, Thomas got in touch and said he'd like to come on the podcast, and I was really happy that he did, because we haven't had that many youngsters on, well, relatively. So it's great to get their story and their opinions on stuff. And so Thomas is half Finnish. His mum is from Finland, and he lived over there up until I think he was 14 when they relocated over to the UK. Growing up, he tells us that he did a bit of cross-country skiing, and all that stopped, obviously, when he relocated. But he took up some orienteering, which, in his own words, wasn't really cool. So he packed that in, and he got into rowing. And then he had a bit of issue, health-wise, unfortunately, and he discovered that he didn't really get on very well with carbohydrates. He's not formally diagnosed as celiac, but he thinks there is some form of celiac issue there. So we discuss that. We discuss how he fuels his training now, and also basically what he does training-wise, as well as how he got into multisport and the races that he's done. So great chat with Thomas, and that's coming up. Met up with episode 77, John Armstrong, who lives in Grimsby, not too far away from us. And we were at a TT, which was put on by local triathlon club, Cleethorpes Tri. And it was a great event, grassroots, but really well attended and a really good time trial. One I hadn't done for a while. It was really good to meet up with John, and he schooled me in time trials. But I was quite happy with my time. And really nice to meet up with John. And how many people actually do any transition training? We don't do a lot, to be honest, in our club. But a couple of our members, Jerry and Michelle, asked us to put something on. So we decided that we would do a bit of practice during our run track session on a Saturday morning. Just basically refresh what, you know, transition's all about. And for people new to the sport, it's a really good investment in time. I mean, it's known as the fourth discipline, isn't it? So obviously, depending on what event you're doing, decides on whether it's more crucial or not. I think personally that if you're doing the shorter distance, the quicker you can get in and out of transition, the better. Longer distances, you don't have to be as rushed. So we did a little bit of that, and I think there was food for thought from a few of the athletes, and really enjoyed it. So we'll be doing a bit more, that's for sure, because it is something that we should practice and nail, and it should be just like second nature. So that was good. And the last week's been filled with Cycling World Championships, which was held up in Glasgow, and it's just been fantastic, to be honest. I've watched quite a lot of it, from track cycling to the road, to the time trial, and onto the mountain bike yesterday, which was Sunday, watching Tom Pidcock get the gold, which was fantastic to see. So that kept us entertained for a while. We also watched the new Mark Cavendish documentary, which is totally recommended, even if you're not into cycling, to be honest, just to get a bit of a feel for the man himself. And it was very good, but very sad as well at times. So definitely worth a watch. A couple of podcast recommendations. The first one is the Triathlon Hour, and that features Hayden Wild. And he had Vincent Louis on as his guest. I've heard a couple of his podcasts before, but I didn't realise that he'd had heart issues and they nearly took his licence off him at one point. Really worth a listen. The second one is the Inside a Tri Show with Helen Murray, and she had on Jess Lamont. And it's always funny to hear Jess because she's just so laid back, so matter of fact, so down to earth. It's just refreshing to hear what she's got to say. And she's pregnant at the moment, and so she's talking about that and about the support that she's getting from British Tri, which is quite nice to hear, and also from other athletes such as Katie Zafiris, who's been through the same thing, recently become a mum. So, yeah, it's interesting to see what she's been up to while she's going through pregnancy. So that's a really, really cool episode. And that's about it for now. So it's time for the main event, and hope you enjoy the chat with Thomas McManus, and we'll see you on the other side. How are you?
Yeah, very good, thanks.
Good, good. Thank you ever so much for taking your time out this morning, for agreeing to come on the podcast and sharing your story.
Right, so I'm Thomas McManus, I'm 25. Age grouper that came from a few couple of other sports. At the moment, I'm sort of at that level where I'm looking at the top of my age group, but doing a mix of races and a bit sort of in limbo about what to be focusing on. So as a lot of you are, I'm juggling work and training and trying to have fun at the same time. So yeah, that's a bit about me.
Cool. So what did you do growing up as a kid, Thomas?
First proper sport of any kind, it was actually cross-country skiing. So I was living in Finland and I was 10, 11 years old, and just joining a club and having fun, not really thinking of it as anything grueling or anything like that. And I was pretty average, but I think it really helped with getting some coordination skills and, you know, enjoying being a bit competitive. Then moved back to UK and did a little bit of orienteering, sort of running in the forest locally, but really it was more following my dad doing what he was doing. I didn't have any intentions. There was nothing structured. And a lot of the time wasn't fun with British weather, you know. It was pretty wet, rainy and cold, and I had myself some migraines occasionally. That really put me off, actually. And I had a year or two there where I was just being a typical teenager and playing computer games and not doing a lot of sport. I never really had proper exposure to triathlon of any kind or... never saw what you could get into, and it was all sort of my dad encouraging me to have a look at one or two other sports. That was how I'd started skiing, that's how I'd started orienteering, and then he suggested I pick up rowing. That's something he'd done, and so I rowed at Reading Rowing Club for a few years. And the first year I wasn't actually even enjoying it that much, but I didn't really have much else to do. It was that or sitting around on the computer, so I kept at it. And before you knew it, sort of as soon as you start to get good at it, it starts to be fun. And then the competitive spirit came back. And so I did a few years of rowing then. And that was until I went to university. But then I had a bit of a struggle with my health while I was rowing. So it turns out I'm a celiac. And if you go too deep with eating gluten a lot and while you're training hard, it does some really bad things to your body. So I'd become anemic and my adrenal glands were also pretty much exhausted. So I really wasn't getting anything out of the training anymore. I was getting slower and slower despite training more and eating more. And I wasn't really absorbing the energy. That turned out to be what it was. So essentially every training session I was doing was like a fasted session, but at the same time, it'd be all race pace because rowing is like that. And I was still loving it, but I was not loving the backwards progression, let's say. Sure. So when I went to university, even though it was a rowing sort of university, Bath Uni, I decided I was not going to row after all, or at least take a year off. And I looked around at the other sports clubs and what seemed fun and what seemed like a nice social place where I could do some cross training and stay healthy and fit while I start thinking about getting back to rowing when I recover. And it was a triathlon club. It was pretty much blew the others out of the water. Every other club was always full of either elites or people who were very, very much wanting to become elites. And the triathlon club wasn't. The triathlon club was all about having a chat, doing some easy cake ride, bike rides, but also some hard interval sessions. But the idea was they were always fun. And I loved that. And I loved that you could just train when you wanted and you didn't have to turn up at 6 p.m. on the dock when someone told you to. So yeah, I picked up triathlon at university just because of that, just because of the fun.
Yeah,
Yeah.
cool. So going back to, we've skated over Finland. So were you born in Finland? What's the tie in there?
Yeah, so my mother's Finnish, so I'm half Finnish and I'm fluent in it, and go there every year or two on holiday, and sometimes in the winter do some more skiing to keep my skills topped up. But yeah, sort of 50-50 there. And I haven't had anything to do with the Finnish Triathlon Association, so I've always been on the GB age group side. But how I got into that was actually through university again, but seeing the people around me talk about these world championship events, and that sounds very grand, and I couldn't really believe that the people around me who I could keep up with in training were doing some sort of world championship. And so I was hearing about them, and you go on the British Triathlon website and you can drop down from some lists there of what the qualifying races are to get into these, and they're just local ones. You just drive an hour or two somewhere and then you do a triathlon, and then you see how you do, and then all you have to do is beat the people around you, or not even beat all of them. So that seemed like that really got me excited to get competitive with the sport. That's how I got into age group as well. But
Yeah.
not much ties to Finland really at the moment.
Sure. And what was the move back for? Was
Yeah, so it was only a temporary time in Finland. It was just because of my mother's work. But
right.
also the whole idea was to get me and my sister, because we were kids, to be fluent and to see our family for a bit longer.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where your parents sort of to get to negotiate over where you live and what kind of life you're going to have. And that was my mother's turn to call the shots.
Yeah. Nice. Well, I mean, it's a great grounding, isn't it? Like you say, you knowing two cultures and speaking two languages, it's just most people would love that. Yeah.
Yeah,
And
it's
then
nice.
moving on to your celiac and the issues you had when you were going through that, how did you find out that was the problem?
I've never been officially diagnosed, but I got to the point where I'd read up on all the science of everything and connected the dots, and tracked all sorts of metrics of my own in Excel, and I'd made all of the associations myself, and got to the point where I realized that gluten was at least in some form of a problem very early on, and stopped eating gluten. And then months down the line, once I was sure I understood exactly what was happening, I'd already been off gluten for a long time. And as it turns out, the NHS isn't going to diagnose you without you first eating a bunch of gluten to damage your gut so that they can analyze it and then tell you that it's damaged. So yeah, that was a tricky one. But it all came what it came down to was the firstly, the correlation of what I'd eat before training had a huge impact on how I felt in training. And that works whether you're celiac or not. There's all sorts of reasons that, of course, is a thing. At first, I thought it was something to do with carbohydrates, and so I was finding that I felt better if I wasn't eating any cereal or porridge before training. And then I realized that actually, if it was bananas or sweet potato or something, then actually it would be fine. So clearly, it was the grains. And then I thought, well, it's not all grains. I can manage Rice Krispies. And then, yeah, it was sort of a correlation thing. And then when you start noticing these patterns, you start to look for why, and then you can read up on these online. And there's you just go on PubMed, you just go on the scientific journals that are free for everyone to read, and you can just browse them and browse them. And I'd open 50 tabs and then favorite them all, and then read them all gradually throughout the day in between studying at university, and that slowly got to the grips of what the problem was. And at the same time, I just happened to read a lot about health and sports science at the same time, and now I've got some pretty strong opinions about what's right and what's wrong, or what's rather good advice and bad advice, outside just advice for celiacs, but also for how to stay healthy when you're an endurance athlete.
You know what you can eat and what you can't eat, obviously, and you're managing that. And how restrictive is that?
At the moment, I feel like it's totally normal because it's been so long. It's lucky for me, maybe, that a big theme of what I've found out was also that at least I personally do better with not eating as much carbohydrate. So not having huge bowls of rice and starchy foods anyway, it just makes me feel lethargic and sleepy. There's a time and place for that, and it depends on exactly what sport you're doing, what kind of distance you're focusing on, as to how much you want to eat. But my diet pretty much doesn't have, I would say it has very little grains in it as it is, and I won't go out of my way to boil some potatoes or eat chips or anything anyway either. And it's not out of trying to be healthier, it's just that it's inconvenient to cook things like that into a form that you need to eat them in. And it doesn't necessarily make me feel better anyway. And I think a lot of carbohydrates taste of cardboard. It's not that restrictive. But for other foods as well, like I think everyone has some sort of food sensitivities or something, or at the very least, there'll be foods that you're eating that are making you perform less well at work or in training that you might not quite realize. You can. There's a trade-off there because a lot of these things are very subtle. Like, if you eat a bunch of cheese, you might not be as good at concentrating on something for a few hours. But does that really matter if, like, you're getting huge amounts of calcium and it's K2 vitamins and everything, all of that? So, yeah, for me, I think the celiac is the key, that to avoid all gluten and for me oats, and then I'm not worried about my health and everything else is just sort of, whatever makes you feel good, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, it's great that you've got to grips with it, and you're right, we're all individual. These diets are just diets, and they're given to everybody, but we all have our own gut biomes and we're all individual, and we all, like you said, we all respond differently to food, don't we? So what have you found then? How does your diet work out? What have you found that you in place of the carbohydrates, if you're going to go and do a long bike ride, what works for you then?
Yeah, it's hard to compare now because I've got to the point where I don't do any drastic changes. There was a time when I was experimenting with all sorts of things, and there's definitely a lot to be said for deliberately using willpower to do something differently, eat something different than you normally would in order to gain some sort of health or fitness effect. There's something to be said for that for sure. But I think the only sustainable way in the long term is to have a diet that you can go through without thinking, without making really any particularly active decisions. Everything has to be pretty much automatic. I think just like anyone, if I feel like I'm low on blood sugar, if I've been stuck at my computer working for 5 hours and haven't eaten anything, then I'm going to reach for a banana or something. And obviously there's the easy decision of you could have a Mars bar or something instead. And that's an obvious choice. You can just you gravitate one way or the other. But either way, the reason you're eating is to fulfill the need. In this case, it'll be like a low blood sugar need. And there'll be other times when you just feel really hungry. Well, the answer to hunger is protein. And then at other times when you really crave some just any kind of snacks, junk food, whatever, the reason is probably you're in a massive calorie deficit and maybe you've done a long bike ride the day before or something. So then you probably need to load up on some more fat of some kind. So it's really basic what your body asks for. And it can be pretty difficult maybe to learn what the cues are. But I find if you get rid of the things that are messing up your perceptions, then you're well ahead. So I think if you're the type of person that does better with less carbohydrate and you're still eating lots of carbohydrate, you're gonna have such a huge change in how you feel after a starchy meal that it's gonna blow everything else out of the water and you're gonna be just blind to how food affects your training and how you feel, because there's something so wrong going on that you're just used to food potentially messing everything up, and you just yeah you're not noticing the pattern there. So if you can get to the point where you're not relying on caffeine and things to prop yourself up, you're not relying on having exactly the right amount of carbohydrate all the time, you sort of learn the ebb and the flow of your energy and what helps it and what doesn't. Yeah, that's a bit wishy-washy, but I think the simple answer is it just takes time
Yeah.
and you learn through failure and through trying things out that don't work.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And you're always learning. I mean, my diet's changed considerably, dramatically over the last, I would say, 5 years at my age. And it is learning. And trying to be as healthy as possible. I mean, you touched there on having a banana over a Mars bar. And my philosophy is, well, if they're not in the house, you can't eat them. So if you put fruit in place where the Mars bar was, then you've got no option other than to go for the bowl of fruit, have you? And that's As simplistic as it sounds, it works. Hopefully
I
other
think
people that are out there that have got the same issues can look into it more and
if there's anything I can improve from anyone on this podcast, anyone that's listening, it would probably be just if they happen to be celiac without knowing. There are probably a lot of people out there, and you don't necessarily have huge stomach pains every time you eat gluten to be a celiac. There can be all sorts of symptoms. So, yeah, it's just something to be aware of. And if you're not celiac, it's probably quite obvious. So.
Cool. So moving back to triathlon then. So you said you took it up at university and you found out about age group there. So how did that progress then from joining obviously the university tri club and the great social side that it involves? What was the next step? What was the development?
I'm going to take a little step back first, actually, as well, just because you need the pros and the cons of everything. So, before starting university, I thought I'd do a triathlon because it seems sort of like one of those crazy things, a bit like running a marathon or whatever, that everyone says, wow, someone's done that thing. So, I looked at this Eaton Dorney Lake standard distance triathlon. So, everyone probably knows this. It's where the Olympic water sports events were held. And they've got loads of triathlons going on, especially in the spring. And this was one of these low-key ones where a whole bunch of people, different abilities, turn up. And I turned up and I hadn't bought a wetsuit. I just thought, it's in a lake, how cold can it be? It's early September, so it's been warming up all summer. I was the only person without a wetsuit, and I got hypothermia halfway through the swim and had to be pulled out against my own will. So I couldn't speak to them. I was trying to tell them, no, I'll keep going, but it was just slurring. And so, yeah, they got me on the kayak and into an ambulance. And I was fine. But that was my first experience with triathlon, actually. And that did put me off for a while. And then I went to university. And then I saw that actually you can do all the separate sports and totally have fun. You don't have to race and you can still be in a triathlon club. But then once I did realize that there were these age group world championship events and that people from my tri club around me were going to them, and there'll be ambitions of being on a podium and you can hold the British flag and this kind of thing, this all seemed really grand. So I just went to a qualifying event that a couple of others, my friends at the club, were also going to, and I knew I was sort of similar speed. Some people were faster swimmers, some people were faster at running. Just turned up and competed, and by then I'd done another sprint triathlon as well, and so I was a bit used to the chaos of transitions and everything. But none of the sports individually particularly scared me. It was the transitions and getting things right, not crashing on the bike. That was what I was worried about always. And the rowing training had meant that I was used to working sort of very hard, and I found I couldn't really work hard in triathlon somehow. I think there's some sort of fitness you need to build in a sport in order to even be able to hurt yourself in it. So I was going along and finding it sort of fun and just kind of cruising around. And then this age group qualifier, similar sort of idea. I did qualify at that one. This was at Arundel, so it's a little town in the south. It's got this castle in it, and the run was this hilly run around the castle. Great fun. I mean, the way the qualifiers just let anyone turn up and you can just go for it, and you don't have any perception of your speed or anything. You just see people all around you, some people overtaking you and you're overtaking some others. I qualified at that one, but I didn't go to the championship because I'd already set my sights on having a crack at every different triathlon distance, because I realized, actually I might prefer to do triathlon than rowing. And I just didn't know which distance I'd want to focus on. I did know that you'd probably want to specialize if you want to be any good at it. Or at least I assumed that was how it would be. So I'd already done a sprint and a standard, and then I'd entered two middle distance triathlons after that first year as well. I don't think I'd entered them very far in advance. I didn't have big hopes that I'd be able to finish them in a particular time or anything. It was just the idea of just ticking them off and seeing just how hard could it be? And so actually a week after that qualifying event, I did Outlaw as my first Ironman. So instead of focusing on racing standard distance. And then it turned out that was my favorite distance. So I won my age group in that already.
Wow.
And I got
And how old were you there?
19. So
19.
That was sort of a big surprise. My dad had planned to surprise me in at the finish line and be there, because I'd just driven myself up to the race and slept in the car, and I was going to drive back on the motorway as well, and I'd never driven on a motorway before, so I think he was probably a bit concerned, and he decided he'd turn up, but he turned up too late, and I'd already finished, because
Oh.
I'd done 10 hours and 3 minutes or something, and he'd really not expected that I'd be that much quicker. So he'd done triathlons back when he was young as well, and so I had some kind of idea of from his stories of what it would be like. Yeah.
Well, that's a great time for your first Ironman at age 19. That's just incredible.
Yeah, thanks very much. It's I think I just happened to hit the jackpot with what I had figured out about training just through all this reading online about what works, and you have to read between the lines a little bit, because no individual scientific paper or coaching blog or anything has all the answers, and a lot of them make some assumptions and mistakes. So it's not like there's one magic bullet. But if you look at everything that all good performances and good athletes have in common, there's not very many things, and all you need to do is those things right, and those must be the correct things. And everything else, if somebody, somebody swears by wearing lucky socks, somebody swears by doing a 50-kilometer long run every Sunday. Well, if those are outliers, they're not the reason for the success. They're more like despite. So I've been keeping my training super, super simple, and honestly, just trying not to get injured. I think my longest bike ride was 4 times 30 minutes, just pretty steady, easy. And then my longest run was a half marathon. That was the second half marathon I'd ever done. I just did that off the bike. It was just solid, not pushing anything. If you stick to the sort of right training intensities and you're realistic about your goal race pace, then you train that goal race pace, and it's pretty predictable. You're on race day, you're just doing what you've been doing in training. You just hold out for a little bit longer, and then it starts to bite at the towards the end. But yeah, you should really know what your performance is going to be before the day.
So just going back to those simple things, what are the from all your reading and things now, say 6 years on, what are your philosophies for training?
Yeah, a lot has changed. To start with, back then, the stuff that I was doing right, it was essentially having a dedicated aerobic training zone and knowing where your threshold is. Those are maybe the two key things. So an aerobic training zone, it doesn't have to be very precise. It just has to be something that you know is sustainable. You don't need to have gels while you're sitting in that zone. And that's the kind of zone where you can race an Ironman for sure, and you'll be sure that you can hold that pace for an Ironman. Now, this is just for long course. I'm sure for shorter distances, then your aerobic training, it can be a bit easier, and you don't need to do such long, steady work. But you just need to make sure your aerobic training isn't too hard, while bearing in mind that your aerobic training is the main training if you're focusing on longer distances like Ironman and half Ironman. And then when I talk about threshold, knowing where your threshold is, that doesn't mean training out threshold. I don't think it's possible to train out threshold, because it's a point, it's not a zone. So I believe it's worth doing some fast or powerful work above threshold for sure, but it's not a sport where we're racing above threshold. So that's not your key session. That's just a little sprinkle on top. So if you know where your threshold is, then the main thing is you're not going to try to do a bunch of work at it. And I think a lot of people do try to do exactly that. I think it's difficult to give generic advice, because everyone's training is limited by something different. So if you're a professional athlete, then you have as much time as you want. You have the whole week free. So you're not limited by time. You're limited by how much your body can take. So you're going to make sure your training is a type of training that doesn't take much out of your body, and then you just do a bunch of it. And if you're an age grouper with an office job, you're probably, and a family, say, you're limited by time a lot, and probably a lot of energy as well. So if you're if you were purely time limited, say you only had 5 hours to train a week, you'd probably absolutely smash it every session, and that would be the best way to go. But then the trouble is, you're not just time limited, you're probably limited about how much energy. You can only do it at 6 a.m. or you can only train at 9 p.m. You're not going to have the energy to smash it, or it'll ruin your sleep. So then you've got to take that into account as well. So it's really hard to say there's one ratio of training, one or two key training intensities that work for everybody. But I would say that everybody needs one that they can cruise at, that they know is their sort of, this is a bad day kind of race pace, that is definitely sustainable. And they need to have a variety of work at some speedier efforts and paces for a mixture of reasons. I think it'll take too long to go into, but you need to work on your strength. You need to work on being able to get to your race paces. I think the main thing will be to have a hard look at what's realistic for you to do in a week, what's fun to do in a week, and there just has to be an overlap in the end between what's going to make you fitter and what you're actually going to do.
I think you're completely right there. It's funny, I just thought about when you were talking about time, when I had Ben on that we talked about earlier on the podcast, he was saying he went from university student where he was time rich, to actually working, then he became time poor. It completely changed his lifestyle and how he was trying to progress the sport. Really, really interesting. I'd never really thought about it like that before. But I suppose when you come from university, when you've got all this time to train, and then you go into the real world and you get a job and life takes over and you haven't got all that time, you've got to train smarter and differently, I guess. Great advice there. Yeah, really good
I think
advice.
so. Maybe that was the sensible answer, but it'd be fun to add some little nuggets that what I thought of at the time as hacks and that do work to an extent for sure. And one of those is deliberately depleting yourself of carbohydrate and then going out for some steady work. And this works especially for long course. So the key isn't to go super slowly and to be hungry, but the key is specifically to avoid carbohydrate and then go at race pace. And if you're focusing on short distance, maybe avoid that. There's no point because you're going to be racing at high intensity. But that's one thing that people can definitely take a lot from, because the generic advice out there from sports scientists and professionals, it's all about eating lots, especially carbohydrates, and then doing loads and loads of really slow training. And that's not really suitable for age groupers. I'm sure it works, but it's a very inefficient way to make use of your time. And in the end, even if you're racing an Ironman and you're looking to finish in 15 hours or so, I mean, that's not going to be an easy pace. So there's no point making your training super, super easy. For sure, some days you have a rest day, and then if you still want to train, yeah, okay, take it easy because you're not supposed to be. But you don't race easy, so easy training isn't going to do a lot for you when you're not a professional doing 30 hours of it.
Yeah, 100%. So where did you go from going back to your Ironman at 19 and doing really well? What was the next step?
Yeah, so I was pretty happy after that one, as you can imagine. And then I'd figured, oh, cool, I can stick to Ironman now and see how much faster I can get at this, because it's a nice puzzle of how do you get better in an Ironman. It's not about who's got the biggest engine, because there's so much to play for in on the day, getting the strategy, the pacing, and being really clever about everything, getting the most out of yourself. So what I'd done then was qualified for the long distance age group world championship in Denmark in 2018. And at that point, I'd done 2 years of studying, and so I went into work for a year on a placement year, sort of year in industry, working at the mini factory in Oxford. And what I was doing outside work was exactly this sort of low volume race pace work, and not eating much carbohydrates, and doing a fair few intervals as well. And to some extent, that worked. I had a good day back in Denmark in 2018. But the good day was, it was all about how it felt. So when you've trained hard, you feel strong on race day, but your speeds are a different story. So I was quite well off the mark. In my age group, I was fourth, but I was half an hour slower than the winner of my age group. So I knew that I was hardly sort of want to be professional material or anything like some people are in those age groups when it's sort of 20, 25 year olds. But I'd had a great time because I'd had a day where I felt like I'd squeezed every drop out of myself and I'd, managed the effort level the best way I could. So that was a great bit of fun. And I was surrounded by all of these other people from the GB age group team there. And you're sort of there as a team. And even though everyone travels there separately and everyone's got their own separate training setup at home, and everyone might be in different triathlon clubs. I mean, I was just training alone. A lot of people do that too. But then you all come together for this age group championship. And it's sort of everyone being in the same place and not really knowing each other. And it's nice because there isn't much of a triathlon community otherwise if you're training alone. So that is one way it comes together in a real sense.
Yeah, unless like you join a club and then you've got the, your own community that you're involved in. But like you say, longer distances generally don't sort of join clubs and that because the training's so solitude, isn't it? It's quite lonely in a sense. I mean, there are obviously people that are in clubs that do the longer distances, but yeah, I can see your viewpoint on that.
Yeah, I would say yeah, it is a shame not to be actively in a club because yeah, I agree. I do find that I train best alone, but it would make a lot of sense to not just do Ironman racing. I think if you do a couple of years in a row of long course, then you get a bit slow. Your endurance becomes great, but it becomes really difficult to go down to a half distance or standard or sprint anymore. So I think a lot of people probably should be doing a mixture over the time, and that would mean you can train with a club for the shorter stuff as well.
Yeah, I think that's certainly in the professionals, that seems to be becoming more of a thing, doesn't it? They're doing all sorts of different distances now. It used to be a completely separate thing where you would either do the World Series, sprint Olympic, or you would do middle distance or long distance. And now they seem to be mixing it up, and there's a lot of interaction between the two. And I think that's only going to get more and more, I guess. There was just this, I don't know, belief that you couldn't actually do everything. Well, the Norwegian have they've put paid to that, haven't they? They're actually doing everything. So it do, and I know they're professionals, and as amateurs, that's probably not the case. You need to focus, but it just shows you what can be done.
I think there's a case in point that they have been taking a very long time to get their speed back after doing long distance. So going from short to long is quite a good idea and it works very well. But the other way around is a lot harder.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you've seen that over the last few months, haven't you? When he's gone back into Christian's gone back into the World Triathlon. He's not, I mean, he's still up there, don't get me wrong. He's still flying, but he's not quite there yet. But then he doesn't have to peak till he needs to. So, that's they're in it for the long game, I think. Nobody would believe like years ago that the when they said, "Oh, we want to win the Olympics," that they would have done it, and they did. So they've already done it once. Yeah, so it's working. Yeah, cool.
And triathlon's a funny sport, and it's quite new still, and everyone still likes to hop back to some of the older athletes from even before the Olympics existed. And for sure, I'm in agreement with that. I don't think people should be focusing too much on what individual athletes of today are doing. And trying to read too much into what that means for how you should train or anything like that. There are always outliers. But if you look back to 20, 30 years ago when it was pretty much an amateur sport, the people doing what they were doing, they were already getting everything right. I mean, there are some crazy good performances from some of the oldies, Mark Allen and people like that. I don't think people train that much better nowadays. I think you can learn a lot from people's stories back then as well. You don't have to worry about all this lactate stuff and whatever other excuses there are for being so fast.
Yeah, and we've just seen it, unfortunately. I just got a post through another top athlete's been caught for doping, haven't they? So yeah, it does make you wonder. Anyway, we're not going to dwell on that. So after your Denmark age group fourth, which was You must have been quite happy with that, even though you were you seem to be a bit on a downer with your time. I mean, you must have been happy with that. What was next?
Yeah, I still felt of myself as a total amateur, and sort of, I think maybe everybody does in triathlon unless they're professional, really. But so actually, I was really happy with that. I didn't, I by no means was comparing myself to the people who are sort of in full-time training and all of that, because there are people who are doing an age group race, but actually they're part of some kind of national team, just at a different distance. So they have these sprint distance World Cup races, which are the actual things the elites do, and there are lots of young people doing those. And then if those young people decide to do a random middle distance race, then it's not the same sort of system. And so actually they're categorized as an age grouper. So when you see somebody exceptionally fast at the front of the field, I don't think it's worth comparing yourself to them too much. Some people can sandbag a little bit. So in 2018, after Denmark, I did Ironman Wales 2 months later. So that was my second full distance, because Denmark was one of these three-quarter distances, which is actually really fun, by the way. I think it's my favorite. I did Ironman Wales because Ironman in the Ironman and Outlaw Nottingham, maybe I shouldn't say Ironman, different brand, is very flat and fast, so hence the 10 hours. But I wanted to see, because a really hilly Ironman would be the longest amount of time on a race course sort of thing, so I went for Wales, and I wanted to see how different would my performance be on a slower, hillier course. But again, I'd kept this sort of very different training program where everything was race pace or hard intervals, and I was still restricting carbohydrates. And again, felt super strong, but this was still a time when I didn't have any power meter on my bike. I didn't look at pace on a watch or anything like that. I was just racing by feel and felt strong all day. Got second age group. There was a local guy, Finn Arends, who's now a professional, who's absolutely brilliant. He beat me on the day, and something to look up to. I was happy with that as well. So I didn't actually, that didn't wouldn't have qualified me for Kona. It was just one age group slot. But that all seems very premature for me. I mean, flying across the world to Hawaii, spending a bunch of money, and then hoping you have a good race when the humidity and the heat is. I can't process how people take that risk, and I'd feel so bad if I on the day didn't think it was going to go well. And of course, it's always a risk every time you turn up. So at the moment, I'd still prefer racing local, at least within Europe. 2018 Ironman Wales, hot day, lots of cramps. There's always loads of issues. I had a mechanical on the bike. So still very happy. And so that means that really what I've learned is that you can have all these challenges along the way, but that's part of the fun. If you really love the speed and the high intensity of a race, then for sure short course is for you. But for long course, I think dealing with adversity on the day, and having that feeling at the finish line is what it's all about. So still 2018 was all about having fun and doing training that I enjoyed and feeling strong, feeling fit and healthy. Still kind of on a high, I suppose, from my recovery from the poor health back earlier. And at this point, I weighed 13 kilos more than I did back when I was celiac. Imagine a rower should be heavier than a triathlete, not the other way around. So it's been a big turnaround. Then after 2018, then I had to focus back on my degree. I was worried about my grades, and the training was, as much as it sort of energizes you mentally, at some point you just need more time to get the studying done. Same can go for work. And so I pretty much stopped training. I kept up a few sprints, as in training, I would sprint up a hill or sprint in the pool a couple of times a week. And the idea with that was just to keep my tendons strong, because I thought I would probably pick up training again after university. So I lost all my aerobic fitness entirely, but I still felt like the body was healthy there underneath. And then when the pandemic hit in 2020, that coincided with me writing my thesis, and I had a lot more spare time and freedom. And then I started hopping on the bike again and going for runs. And same kind of idea, lots of interval training and not doing too much. And I think a lot of injuries come down to doing too much training rather than too hard. I think training very hard can make your heart rate go wiry and all of that, but physical injuries are normally from too much volume. So I was doing that, having fun, smashing myself up outside in the summer, and I entered the Hever Castle Race Series Bastion. So the Hever Castle Race Series, Castle Race Series is this England race series where there's a couple of races in France as well and outside England, but every race is around some sort of British heritage site, National Trust sort of castle, and they're really scenic, and the run is always off-road, at least partly, and there's a really great atmosphere. And I'd previously done one of these with the university. We'd camped out the night before, and we had a group discount for going to it, and it'd been a lot of fun. So their biggest race, their sort of headline thing, is the Bastion, which is their full distance race, and that's in Kent. So I did that, and I won the whole thing overall. And that had been after going from losing all of my fitness over 2 years to doing a year and a few months of this sort of interval training stuff. And that just felt really good because it's a sort of straight trajectory. Normally you have troughs and peaks, and you get better, you get worse, you get injured. But that had been a sort of consistent period, and that felt great. And I actually got some prize money, and not pro or anything, but they gave me £600.
Excellent.
Yeah, that was super good. And then Steve True interviewed me at the finish line. I didn't know who he was at the time, but he wrote this book about triathlon, and he gave me a copy. So
Okay.
that was fun. Felt like a celebrity or something for a few minutes there. But in the end, that was just that was one of these sort of age group races. You don't normally get professionals turning up to those. Then moved to Bristol. My girlfriend's studying there, or was studying there at the time, and picked rowing up again because I felt like I had some unfinished business. In rowing, you have these fitness tests that you do on the rowing machine, and all rowing machines are there, they're sort of all calibrated the same. So it's like a power meter on a bike. It's a very pure test of pure power. And they have the 2 kilometer and the 5 kilometer, and they're the sort of key fitness tests. And I never really liked how my scores had been because I got worse because of celiac back then. So I joined the rowing club and had a great time rowing through Bristol Harbour a bunch, and then did an erg test in spring, and then stopped rowing again. So I
So
ticked
is
off
that put to bed now? Are you done with rowing?
Put it to bed. I would say if I had to pick a single sport, because triathlon's three sports, and if I had to pick a single sport, rowing would be my favorite. It's got everything you would want. But I'm just not quite as good at it. Turns out I think long distance triathlon seems to be where I'm best, and things are more fun if you're better at them, you've got to be honest. So
Oh, yeah.
here we
Well,
are.
that's what you do it for, isn't it? To have fun and enjoy it. Otherwise, what's the point?
So then after Bristol, now a year ago I moved to London. I started a bit more of a higher end job, sort of management consultancy, which I'm still at. What they've let me do now is work remote 4 days a week. So I'm in Bath now. So I've lived in London for a year, right in central London, this tiny little box flat, doing lots of work on Zwift and then running around Battersea Park. Now we're back in Bath just for a week, just since a week ago. All that training in London, while it was sort of all indoors and a bit sort of icky, going around the same routes the whole time, it was all quite minimalist, and it worked quite well. And last year I had my best season yet. So I did three full distance races all in a 7 week period, which is definitely not advisable for most people. And I would say I didn't plan it. It just happened to work out that way. So what I was first, I went back to Outlaw. So I wanted to see how I'd compare with my previous effort. And I did know that Outlaw is one of these interesting races where you have the potential to get a professional license if you get on the podium. There's some special rules on how exactly it works, but I want to see how close I was to that, because if you can get a professional license, it's a big ask, but if you did, then you can race as much as you want for a fixed fee, with any given sort of race company. So, for example, if you like racing the Ironman branded ones, you pay them a fixed amount every year. I don't know if it's 500 or 700 quid or something, and you can race as much as you want. And just purely for that, because I wouldn't be any good as a pro, I'm far off the mark. But if I could just about get that, then that would actually mean the sport becomes extra fun. Yeah. So anyway, I had a go at that. I went to Outlaw again, and yeah, you always have adversity on the day. Very windy day, tough day. Came away with sort of 9 hours dead as a time, so I'd improved by an hour, but I was
Wow.
still fifth. So some of the previous editions that might have got me on the podium, but that was a fifth overall. So was pretty happy with that. But what I had planned earlier was then to go to Finland and do their full distance race. There is there. I think there's just the one Ironman Finland, and it was the second edition. And that was meant to be just a holiday race. So it was around my birthday, and I was just going to be hanging around with my family. And when I did that race, and I'd actually in, mentally, without telling anybody, I'd sort of I was quite serious about that, and I'd really knuckled down with the preparation and not trained more than usual, but I was very careful about what exactly I was doing in the last 2 weeks leading up to it. And then I definitely had the race of my life there. So this was up in central Finland, middle of the countryside, really beautiful. It's nice sunny dry weather, and just yeah, I think I smashed it. The first two hours of the race were pretty slow, and then I just sort of got faster and faster and went through the whole field. And the whole thing is that this race didn't have a professional field, so a bit like at the Bastion at Hever, no current professionals had turned up. So you could actually have the experience of racing as a professional, being at the front, and it feels like the real deal. It feels like you're the star and whatever. And again, I just pulled out a sort of 9 hours just under kind of result, but won by 7 minutes, and had all these Finnish people around me cheering for me because I was half Finnish, and that was a really amazing experience. If you look out for these, you can occasionally find races that you can, you know, you can be towards the front, maybe even, yeah, because they don't necessarily attract prize money or anything like that. So then, yeah, brilliant experience that was. Yeah, and then a few weeks after that, I just spontaneously entered Challenge Almere. So this was actually the European long distance age group championship of the year last year. But even though I'd qualified for it, I'd not decided to enter it before because I thought it clashed with my other race plans. But then I decided to go for it anyway because I'd seen some of the Finnish professionals were racing it, and I wanted to see how I measured up with them. And that meant I had to enter the open race, so I wasn't in the official GB whatever competition. But you start the race half an hour behind the others, and yeah. So I did that, and again, similar time, sort of a bit slower. I was clearly very tired from the season. But that was great fun as well. And I got second in the open race. I don't know if that means a lot, because I think if you compare the times for my age group, I'd have been second as well. And there were a bunch of other people and a bunch of pros that were well faster. So but yeah, I suppose I can claim that as well. And then yeah, the guy that beat me was this huge Polish guy, looked like a massive rugby player, and I was amazed at how someone like that could be so fast. Yeah, but
All
that was
shapes, all
the last
sizes.
big one. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's a good thing about triathlon, like I've said before, doesn't matter what your build are, everybody can do it. And
Yeah,
everybody
for sure.
surprises other people that, how can somebody like that race like that? It's yeah, but you
Yeah,
just
there's definitely some there's a resilience aspect, especially to the longer distances, isn't
Yeah,
there?
definitely. Yeah, cool. Excellent. Yeah, well, you sounds like you had real good fun and some really good results, to take away considering, like a lot of age groupers that you're working as well, and this isn't a full-time thing. I think you can't ever lose sight of that. You've got to respect the effort that you're putting in from a sporting perspective and a fun sort of side of it to your working lifestyle as well, you know what I mean? So to get the results that you're getting at the moment is just, yeah, it's it looks like
Yeah,
whatever you're doing is paying off.
there's some paradox there, isn't there? Because you can't realistically train huge training sessions and do race simulations all the time when you're training for something long, you just have to turn up on the day and see how it goes. Everyone's training, like nobody's training goes to plan. And I for sure am someone who prefers really short sessions and keep the quality relatively high. But then it's a bit of an unknown when you turn up on the race day. And then you're just in control of the effort. And then you see what comes out the other end. And I think the best thing is when you what you take away from it is how it felt, not what the time was, because the time isn't really in your control.
So what was next? Ibiza?
That's right. Yeah. So this year there was the long distance world was in Europe again. So I figured it was worth going to, and I'd qualified based off well any of the three last performances. So yeah, I thought it would be great fun, and I suppose I've tried to block out if I had any ambitions a long time ago, but well before the race I got an Achilles injury, and so I committed I'd still race it because I didn't have any other races sort of that close to it, and I just got around, but it was very painful. But I got to say, anyone who has a problem like that, whether it's before a race or during a race or anything, if you're considering whether it's worth going around, and the only reason not to is pretty much discomfort, just do it, because you'll feel terrible if you don't. You'll feel so much better at the finish line if you just even if you walk it. So
Well, I can totally relate to your Achilles problem because I'm going through that at the moment.
oh
And
no.
I had an issue, and then I went and raced the duathlon qualifier earlier on in the year. I think it was May time. And I was the last 600 meters, it went again, finished the race. But, I've suffered ever since trying to get it back. I've not run since then. So how are you dealing with yours? What did you do? Because this is interests me personally, having the same
Yeah,
issue.
we have to be tricky because we don't know exactly if we have the same issue.
That's absolutely right, yeah.
Mine was definitely tendonitis. It was the flare-up itself that was the issue. So it's not like I'd snapped anything.
Yeah.
And once I was honest about what I needed to do, and I just stopped trying to move it and train it, and stopped fiddling with it and trying to do exercises and all of that, but gently stretching and making sure there's blood flow to it. I'll never know what exactly was the key thing, but I think that there's never any harm in gentle stretching and sort of foam rolling or using your fingers to just knead your soft muscle around that. In the end, the only way it's going to be repaired is you got food coming in and turns into useful proteins and stuff, and then it repairs it, right? And you just wait, and you have to try and help make sure there's no bottleneck stopping that happening. And then the inflammation itself, of the flare up, any swelling or anything like that, I don't know, you again, you just have to wait, and that's part of the healing process. So I found once I sort of let go of the reins a bit and just accepted I should just focus on work for a bit. I did some extra hours and made some people happy on projects. Then, then it starts to clear up, or at least it feels like time's passing faster. But I've had a lot of injuries in my time as well, and I think the best advice would be to try to prevent them in the first place. But if you have a niggle, do something like differently straight away. Like if you had a long run planned and something feels a bit off, just do a shorter run. Like it doesn't have to be much, but just acknowledging that there's a problem is often enough to stop the problem in its tracks, you know.
And I don't know about you, but that's just so hard to do, isn't it? It's like, because you're always doing stuff, you're either swim, bike, run, weight training, yoga, whatever. You're always doing stuff, and it's like it's so hard just to stop. I mean, it's been mentally tough for me not to run, because you surround yourself with people. My wife, she's into triathlon, and they're out running and they go track sessions, and you're not part of it, and it's just so hard. But you've just got to, like, right, that's it, not. Stop not doing that. I can still bike, and I can still swim, and I can still strength train, to an extent. So you just have to focus on those things and forget about park the running, and just like you've just said, just let it repair, let it heal itself. And it's one of those injuries, isn't it, that it does take time. It does take time. So
Yeah, they all do. Yeah, you can be unlucky. There are some that take longer than others. But
yeah.
yes, triathlon's a weird sport like that, because you, at first, I think you have this nice positive optimism where you go, oh, it's three sports. Anytime I don't feel like I want to run, I'll just go for a swim. And that's really useful because that means you are, you're optimistic about training, you do more training, you're keen about it. Then at some point you start to plan it and you start to say, oh, well, I should be doing four swims a week, whatever. And then if you don't do that, you start to stress. Or if you get injured and you skip something, then you stress. But the fact that you can still do something is way different from other sports. Imagine if you're a pure runner and you have an Achilles injury, you'd be miserable. So
Absolutely.
rather than stressing about trying to tick off boxes, this is a sport where there's always more you could do. Like even the
Yeah.
professionals probably feel like they don't have enough time in the day. So if you're getting out there and doing something, then you're probably making forward progress. I've not got crazy training volumes back. If you look at my Strava or anything, then like I think my longest training week in ages was maybe 18 hours last year sometime. That's quite a lot, but my normal week would be more like 14 or something. And then I've
Yeah.
got plenty that are more like 5 or 6 as well. If I've got an illness or whatever, just for a few days, it knocks it down. So and I've still made plenty of gains. It's not, people say you need to do huge volume, but is that despite or because of, is it the thing that's driving the progress? I'm not sure it is.
Yeah. I think it just goes down to what works for you personally, doesn't it? Like we've said all along in this podcast, you find your own ways and they work for you and you just build on those. So just going while we're in this realm of training then, what does a week of training look like for you at the moment?
I've got this slightly neurotic habit of I'm constantly like designing a perfect training week and I never actually execute it, but knowing that there's something that I strive towards is sort of that's a nice little guiding thing. So then I know what discipline to do, what day. So I won't go into what I wish I would do, but what I realistically do. So what I tend to end up doing is about probably average about four swims a week. They all end up being about 45 minutes because my toes cramp up if I go any longer than that. If anyone has that issue, you can just take more electrolyte and a water bottle on the side, and that staves off for a bit longer. But anyway, that's my limit. So maybe four 45-minute swims, and unless I'm feeling tired, those will tend to have some efforts in, like some 200s or 300s, where I'm looking for that edge of what's sustainable. So I'd be going a bit faster than race pace. And then once I feel like it starts to burn or it starts to be like a little bit too fast to be useful, then I'll stop and I get my 30 seconds rest or whatever. And whatever I do get my breath back, I'll go again. And that won't be very much. It'll be a maybe 5 200s or something like that. So that what's that? It's just maybe 5 times 3 minutes or something. It's not a lot of work. But the fact that I don't expect too much of myself in swimming means that I'm more likely to go to the pool in the first place,
Yeah.
especially if I've got a lot of work to do and my only time I can go is at lunchtime. Then, I'm going to feel quite guilty about doing any swimming at all if I've got a lot on my plate. So that'll be the swimming. For cycling at the moment, it varies a lot because I'm finding that for me, cycling volume doesn't seem to really do much at all that's any good. It might be contrary to what a lot of people say, but I think some of my muscles, my glutes get weak if I just do easy volume. I don't seem to get much out of it. And so for the cycling, I tend to sort of add it wherever I'm not going to do a swim or a run, and I've got spare time and energy. So it really varies. It'll just mean hopping out on the bike. I probably wouldn't even plan what I'm going to do, and then I find myself going around some route that I've spontaneously decided I like. And then if I'm feeling good, I might stick it in a big gear and blast it up some of the hills, and sort of make up some short intervals as I go. Lately, it's been very unstructured, but previously I would have said that there's two types of bike ride that I would do, and this is what I used to do that has definitely worked for me. One type of bike ride is you're working sort of 10-mile time trial sort of effort. You could do intervals of somewhere between 3 minutes and 12 minutes or so, and you're really, really pushing those. but not going as hard as you can, because then you're going anaerobic and that's not very sports specific. It's not very useful. But so you're working hard, trying to put out lots of power and trying to use all of the muscles in your legs. It doesn't really matter how much you would do, in my opinion. You do them until you feel like you've got a good training effect and you feel like, okay, that was tough. And then the other kind of bike ride is sort of around Ironman pace, where you're trying to make your legs resilient and you're trying to not burn carbohydrates, but manage to keep pushing out power when your legs are tired and you don't have much carbohydrate on you. So yeah, the cycling is kind of either or. Then for running, I would say the main thing for me, I try to cap the volume. So I'll look at what how much running I've been doing in previous months, and if I've never done more than say 60K a week, then I'm definitely not going to do more than 55. So the most important thing is to do less running than what makes you injured. But then once you've decided, okay, you're not going to do more than that, then you can actually, I think, be quite free with what to do with it. I think training, running at race pace is so useful when it comes to long course, because it doesn't take a huge amount out of you, but it really drills in that gear that you want to be able to find normal on race day. So running at race pace is super, super useful. But if you only run at race pace, then your legs will start to gonna you know, lose a bit of strength and pop. So you need to add some hill reps or something faster there occasionally. But I'm finding that I'm managing to still keep making improvements, even if I'm not doing long interval sessions, if I'm just doing a bit of intensity here and there. And the consistency of just not getting injured seems to be enough to keep the ball rolling. Yeah, I wish I'd had more crazy sessions to boast about from a long time ago, but nowadays really just getting the box ticked is my priority.
Yeah,
For
I
sure, I
think
prefer smashing it over the easy stuff.
that. But I think that's quite refreshing for people to hear. You know what I mean? It's not. It's like you said earlier. It's about keeping it simple, isn't it? And doing what works for you, and that's the key. The consistency. Again, that everybody raves about consistency, and I think you know whatever you're doing, as long as you keep it consistent, you'll probably find some gains there. So yeah,
Yeah, I
cool.
wouldn't want anyone to copy what I actually do, because that's not ideal by any means. But
No.
there are some principles that are definitely worth using to get the most out of your training. And one would be that, because triathlons always end in a run, there's no point running on fresh legs. People will worry about injury if you're not running on fresh legs, but you have to be able to run off the bike. Now, I don't really do many brick sessions, because you end up having such a huge calorie deficit if you do a bike ride and then a run back to back. If you're doing 2 hours plus of training, then you really have to start planning your nutrition. And I just don't want to do that. I'd rather just eat normally and then catch up on calories afterwards. So I would tend to do maybe a bike ride and a run the same day, but put quality into both of them, and maybe have some time in between where you actually have a meal and everything. So that's pretty important in my opinion. And then on the bike, because if you're doing a longer distance, it's strength endurance more than your absolute power, really, then you need to be using lower cadences. And you need to make sure that you can manage the training without having gels all the time as well, and without having some toast straight before every ride. If you're somebody who's prone to not eating enough, then of course this is not for you. This is advice for the people who are trying to squeeze in as much training as they can and also eating as much as they can. You can probably get away with less if you do less of both. Yeah, and I won't give any swimming advice, because my swimming's pretty terrible at the moment. But ask me again in a year, because
Excellent. I love your honesty.
I'm focusing on it at the moment, because here in Bath they've got this elite squad, which is mostly just students. But they train for these World Cup races, and I'm really hoping that they at some point would let me train with them in the pool. I'm working on my speed a little bit just in case.
Yeah. Well, good luck with that. Well, thank you ever so much for sharing your background there. It's really fascinating. From where you've come from to where you're at now at the moment, and obviously lots to come, lots to come in the future. So we'll go on to the quick fire questions, and the first one is, what's your favorite bit of kit?
First thing that comes to mind is my Stride foot pod. Goes on your shoe, and it's meant to measure power, but I don't really look at that. What I like is that it measures your pace the same way as GPS, but because it's using accelerometers instead of GPS, it gets the pace right straight away. So if you're running somewhere where there's trees above you or whatever, the GPS isn't going to be accurate, but the pace on your watch is going to be dead on. Yeah, they're not cheap, those, but that's just added so much confidence to when I'm doing any kind of interval sessions that the paces that the watch is showing are correct. That's so useful to me. Same goes for a race. If you're running a marathon or something, and then the watch suddenly starts saying a pace that's wildly off, then that's going to mess with you mentally. So it's nice having a Stride.
Yeah, that's. I just recorded one last week and it's coming out on Wednesday. And Andy, he said exactly the same. I've never had anybody say that before, but Andy said that was his favorite bit of kit as well. So two in a row. So there must be something in it. What resources do you use for helping your training and triathlon in general?
Experience, and I have some notebooks that I'm constantly scribbling things out into, but I never actually read them again, so maybe I shouldn't say that. Kind of wish I could. There's just so much advice that I feel like I want to like impart on, well, myself and others, but I just don't have a consistent way of doing it at the moment. And then what I have used for a long time is an Excel sheet I made myself, which is it's basically training peaks in Excel, but I think there's a lot of problems that and assumptions that training peaks uses, and I kind of get around those by using my own formulae. And anyone using training peaks, don't focus on the TSS score too much. It doesn't mean what you think it means, probably. But yeah, so if you have some way of tracking your own training, I think some kind of training log that shows you patterns, then that can be quite useful. You might not know how it'll be useful before you start, but then once you've done it, you'll wish you started earlier, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I've stopped at the moment, but because I'm not training in earnest. But when I'm training and going for qualification races and things, I use the triathlon diary that Joe Friel puts out, and that's really useful because it's journaling, I suppose, a bit like you writing it down. But I do often find myself reflecting back to find out where I was a year ago and what worked, if that makes sense, for a particular race to get me there. So yeah, I can fully understand that. I do that. Yeah, the triathlon diary is quite valuable for me. That's what I use. But again, it's getting your thoughts down on paper, and yeah, I think it really helps mentally, even if you don't, like you said, even if you don't look at it again, to get actually it out of here onto there, then it frees your mind as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, cool. What advice would you give to anybody starting off in wanting to get into triathlon, especially from your sort of age group? I mean, like I said, we said earlier, I don't really speak to a lot of younger triathletes, so it'll be interesting to get your view.
I'd say that I'd tell people that it's a funny sport where there's a huge spread of ability, and whoever you happen to know who's a triathlete is not necessarily representative of the whole community. They might be way faster because of whatever reasons. They might have loads of experience. They might be on some national team, or equally, they could be someone who, they've bought all the kit and they look very professional, but actually, they're very much beatable. So, well, that sounds like one thing, but essentially, I'd say try to look for a community, your local triathlon club, and see what they're about and try and join them. But then, unfortunately, nowadays, really, you have to go online to sort of get an appreciation for what the triathlon world's all about. If you go on the British Triathlon website, you can read about various races that are on and qualifiers, and you can look at people's results and all sorts. So then you can get a feel for how it goes and what the different distances are and all of that. But in the end, in terms of actually doing triathlon, doing training and racing, it has to be fun. Because there's three different sports to train for, you're pretty much guaranteed to make progress if you're doing training and you're enjoying it and you're not being crazy lazy. So you don't need to overthink it. The best training session is the one that you actually complete. So
I like it.
that's what I'd say.
I like it. And just while we're on the, excuse me, the three disciplines, what's your favorite discipline? I meant to ask you earlier, but it slipped my mind. What's your favorite discipline out of the three?
I'll be running, I think.
Running. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Interesting. Yeah. And then finally, shorter and longer term goals.
Yeah, I feel like I'm not in a position to set goals at the moment. I've seen people my age from university have huge ambitions to go professional, and already people have said things like, "Oh, age group is too easy, it's not worth anything, whatever." And those people, it's easy to get angry at them. And then a year later, they've quit the sport. I mean, so clearly, don't go biting off more than you can chew and setting lofty goals for the long term, because you just end up overtraining or losing motivation. And I could say the same about anyone who's considering getting a coach. Make sure they're a coach that is there to help you have fun and not just going to prescribe you something that's meant to win you a world championship or something. So for my own goals, I would say it's quite a while since I started to realize that I could feasibly maybe get a professional license if I strike lucky on a good season. So I think that is something I still want to do. I'm not going to set a time on it, maybe next year. But in the short term, I'm looking to do 70.3 Worlds in Finland. That's in 4 weeks now. That I'm not going to set any particular goals for. I haven't done a half Ironman in a long time, and I'm expecting I won't be as good at half as I will be at full. But then the weekend after, I'm doing Ironman Wales, so the real challenge will be doing those two races within a week of each other, and seeing if I can go faster than last time. I'm sure I will, but I'll have very sore legs probably even on the start line.
Cool. Well, good luck with it all. I'll be looking out the results as they come in, especially the one in Finland, because that's nice to see that you're going back home, as it were. Excuse me, and you're racing at home, so that'll be cool. And thank you once again for coming on the pod and sharing your story.
Great thing you're doing here. Glad to be a part of it. All right. Cheers. Bye
Cheers.
then.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye. Bye. Really enjoyed that chat with Thomas. Again, thank you once again for coming on, Thomas, and sharing your journey. Very interesting. And we'll be watching out for what you're doing in the future, especially the 70.3 Finland and the Ironman Wales coming up. So yeah, good luck with those, and hope you enjoyed Thomas's ideas on food and training in there. Definitely food for thought for all of us, pardon the pun. And so glad that his first triathlon didn't put him off when he rocked up with a wetsuit and got hypothermia, because I think he probably would have put a lot of people off. So well done for sticking in and getting to where you want to be, and that sounds like you're going to try and get your pro license. So again, good luck with that as well. And that's about it for this episode. I hope you've enjoyed it. If you would like to come on the pod and share your story as an age grouper, just get in touch. You can drop us an email at the agegroupmultisportpodcast@gmail.com, and you could also DM us on Instagram. We're at amp_1967. We're on Facebook at AmpGB, and we're on Twitter, which is now obviously called X, Age Group Multisport Podcast. And if you have enjoyed this, we would really appreciate it if you could leave a review, a rating, and subscribe to our channel, because it really does help us to get out there to other like-minded people in our community. And also, if you could share it around with your friends, with your groups, with your clubs, it would be really, really appreciated also. So, yeah, thank you very much. So, until the next episode, hope you have a good fortnight and your training and your races go according to plan. And as ever, stay safe, keep training, and love the process.